March 25, 2021, it's a Watt for Pedro show.
Have you heard anything about philosophy?
Well,
what have you read, actually?
I'll tell you what I've read. You know these books that they put out, books, this made simple, that made simple, law made simple, and stuff.
Uh-huh.
Well, they got one called Philosophy Made Simple.
Uh-huh.
Well, I read that. And, well, that's the only thing I've actually read all the way through. And I bought a few books. Something I picked up about language, truth, logic. You know, like stuff like that, I just picked up and something I get into, man, and I don't get any further than first few pages, you know, and then I start looking around and try to find things.
What do you think you're looking for? You're interested in philosophy? I mean, what?
I don't know. That's what I mean, I don't think it's really that I'm looking for is an end, you know. But it seems to be something in it that I'm kind of like, you know. I guess it's just for seeing what I finally decided that it would be a good idea to see what other people thought about it. You know, just make people think better than I did, you know.
Mm-hmm.
See what they think about living. Just, you know, it's like.
Well, let me ask you this. What do you think about living in life up to this point?
Well, I couldn't give you an answer. I couldn't have a family together, well, man, you know? I don't think I have. I couldn't say.
Do you think there seems to be an overall plan to the thing? And do you think that your life is predetermined, or that you're your own free agent and you make what you want of your life?
Well, it seems like I make. I believe when you say that you make almost what you want, but in a way you do, but like when, it seems like the part that you don't have much to do with.
Much control over.
Yeah, like when is when, you know, you kind of set your course, but when you arrive and things like that, you know. It doesn't always happen as you plan, you know, you don't know that's
sure
somewhere else. You know, you can kind of set it.
Before you got interested in philosophy and
well, I'll tell you,
starting to think about philosophy, what did you,
I can tell
you.
It started with religion, I guess. And taught some childhood, you know, religion. And then the first question of religion. Well, that brought on everything. You know, when I got days where I would start to wonder about things.
Mm-hmm. What faith were you brought up in, Jim?
Methodist.
Did you have a very strict religious life, or was it better?
Well, it wasn't too strict, but it was there. I mean, like my grandfather, both my grandfathers were ministers. And my mother, she was very religious. But, like, in my early years, well, I went to church at the Southern and stuff like that. Being under the influence of the grandfather, he was the dominating character in the family. He was most well-versed, I guess, politically. He was most active, you know. My father was a tailor, but he never seemed to say too much. He just went about his business, that was it, you know. But my grandfather, he was pretty militant, you know. Politically inclined in religion, which is fear, you know. So that's where I grew up in that.
Pedro Show. Happy Thursday. Although for my guest, it's Friday. We'll start off the show, John Coltrane talking to August Bloom, 1958, a little excerpt. I think it was an hour spiel, and this is like a couple minutes. And then DJ Smallcock, would love him. And Brother Matt, Love Grotto, Pleasure Point. Still quit in quarantino mode. But I'm not totally man alone because those Estonian software engineers with their Skype invention. I got Lucas Abella from Sydney. Welcome aboard, Lucas.
Hey, g'day. How you doing?
Yeah, really good to have you aboard. How are you sitting with the floods?
Well, floods they didn't really hit where I am in Sydney. Like there's some, you know, filled up drains and stuff, and driving around was a bit hectic. But it was mainly around the river areas that had the flooding. Like my brother's place almost got flooded. But we're sitting pretty where we are.
Okay, that's good. That's good. It's people, you got to realize they're the other side of the equator. So our winter, their summers, spring, fall. You know, it's like the other side. They even got different stars and stuff. Okay, but.
Topsy-turvy world down here.
Yeah, you know, I had a. In fact, we'll play some music a little later from him, but a cat from Tasmania, Ben Salter. I think he's where that trippy. The guy who won all the money gambling, and he built a trippy museum.
Oh yeah, David Walsh.
And I think, in fact, the bass man from Violent Femme.
Yeah.
Milwaukee guy. He runs it. It's like underground, right, or something.
Oh yeah, Brian, what runs Mona Foma, which is a festival every January.
Yeah, he does that too. Yeah, he does that too. Yeah, Brian Ritchie.
Yes, the guy.
That's his name. And kind of like a bass, but like acoustic guitar, not a stand up. But yeah, let's get into you, man. I love this music you said. It's a fucking mind blow. Much respect.
Thank you.
So I want to get into your journey through music. Really, Lucas, bring your earliest musical memory, please.
Earliest musical memory? Well, look, there wasn't much music in my house. Like, my parents didn't really play music in the house. So, I guess radio and stuff, I don't know, like, the first things I ever got into was, like, maybe In Excess in the mid-80s or something like that. Like, my brothers got into metal, so I guess I started listening to metal quite young. And then, you know, I was always attracted to things that were different, so started discovering punk and goth and alternative music in general in the late 80s. And then when I started getting into industrial music, I learned of a record by Boyd Rice where he had holes drilled in the record so they could be played off access. So I guess
yeah, there was two holes. I have that first 45. There was two holes, and one wasn't in the middle.
yeah, pagan music. So being from the Gold Coast, I couldn't buy that record, so I decided instead of buying it, I'll just replicate it on any old 7-inch. So I started drilling holes in my records. that's where my musical journey began.
So you're saying the pad Gold Coast was like by Brisbane, right?
Yeah, it's just south of Brisbane, yeah.
Right.
So there's no alternative record stores there. We'd have to go to Brisbane to find music.
I'm curious.
There's no alternative radio there, so we could barely get Triple Z out of Brisbane if we're on a clear day. Without pre-internet days, it was really hard to find out about things, let alone buy things like pagan music by Boyd Rice.
Okay. So, but I'm curious about just the musical situation. You're saying there was no musical instruments in the pad you grew up in.
No, there's not much of a musical family. Like, I guess there was an opera singer on my mum's side, but besides that,
there's nothing to play on in the house. What about at school? Were you in the choir, the marching band, or shit like that?
No, I can't sing for shit. I do have a memory of trying out for choir and being politely told to go.
and no, like trumpet or clarinet or march snare drum or shit like that.
Oh, we did violin lessons in primary school. I think everyone had to do it to see if they had talent. And I think I was one of those other people who was told that they didn't have talent and was moved on.
Yeah, I got told with the clarinet in seventh grade, his name was Mr. Luna, said, Mr. Watt, you try hard, but, you know, why don't you, you know, stop wasting your time, stop wasting my time. And he looked at the class, stop wasting our time. So I never took another music class. I was like 12 years old, it crushed me. But luckily I found a buddy. So did you find anybody at school, you know, the garage band thing, the bedroom band, the basement band? Did you get into shit like that?
Yeah, that happened eventually. Like, as I said, like I started disassembling records in my bedroom and it did that for a little while. But then I started getting... started finding friends that were into alternative music and industrial music, and we started a garage band of sorts where I'd clang on bits of metal a la Einstein de Neubauten and style kind of percussion.
Did you ever hear of that guy called Zev?
Yeah, of course, yeah.
I've seen him many times, almost killed at his gigs by his own stuff.
Yeah, he's amazing, yeah.
Oh, we lost him, cancer got him, but man, he was beautiful, man. He was an incredible cat. And people got to understand, you know, this is 70s punk, so it could be anything. It didn't have to be fast guitar. It could be anything.
Some of the early punk was just bad rock and roll, but I really appreciated when it started getting abstract, like the No Wave movement, where the idea of punk was converted into, you know, just more anti-music rather than... just trying to be sloppy and anti-establishment, because I think it was more to the punk idea, and then it kind of moved into noise where I kind of levitated to it.
But there was some early stuff too. The Throbbing Gristle is right way back, you know. In fact, they're using money from the Pink Floyd album covers to finance that shit.
True, there's lots of anomalies in music through history that don't fit the trends of the time, for sure.
Yeah. Now, there was a great band, kind of sloppy rock and roll maybe, but The Saints.
Oh, yeah. Brisbane.
Yeah. And you know, and I know from the Stooges playing there three times in Australia, there was a big love for that too. So maybe some of the sloppiness was because they were just learning how to play.
Yeah, I think I often think that like the whole grunge thing is more an Australian thing than a Seattle thing, because Australian punk was more laid back. Sloppy rock and roll, which kind of what is grunge in a way. Like a lot of the Adelaide bands all have that kind of sound, and the Saints and other things like that. But
well, what about about Birthday Party and then Beast of Bourbon? I mean, that stuff was kind of like
Birthday, yeah, amazing, yeah. Well, yeah, every once in a while, artists come out that, you know, just explore something completely new. But Melbourne was really fertile ground back then. The whole little bands movement, which was concurrent with New York No Wave, like. Just doing some amazing shit, lots of amazing bands.
Like DNA?
And throughout Australia that didn't really get either recorded or much fanfare anywhere else in the world.
Well, did that band that you guys met where you were doing the percussion, did you guys do gigs?
No, we never gigged. I didn't gig until I moved to Sydney years later.
Okay.
There was no gigs on the Gold Coast. There was a punk scene, like I used to go see some punk shows. But nothing, no experimental music on the Gold Coast that I ever saw. I later played there with Cicatrice 3, in the venue that used to haunt when I was a teenager.
Yeah.
But, that was years later. But, it wasn't so much of a kind of music I liked on the Gold Coast. I have to go to Brisbane.
Sure.
That kind of thing.
And, I always thought Melbourne was more of the rock, music town than Sydney.
Melbourne is, they've got lots of venues, lots of musicians. Musicians gravitate to Melbourne, so it has a very fertile scene for that reason. Sydney is a capitalist town, and all the venues have closed and turned into little gambling casinos, and it's really hard here now. It's not an easy place to be a musician.
Oh, damn. Well, let's get back into your past there. Did you ever, like, try to do the academic thing, like learn about music in school, like, you know, college and stuff?
No, I barely passed high school, so...
That's okay.
I kind of finished high school, went to Sydney, found myself accidentally with a radio show, and when I got the radio show, I was doing a graveyard shift, and I just got bored with playing other people's records, so I started going into those bedroom experiments with disassembling vinyl and re-putting it back in. So I guess that track Love Him is an example of some of my work back then in 92, 93, when I was doing the radio show, where I think I had three record decks, or playing at different speeds. So I had those 16 to 78 players, and then I'd have, instead of tone arms, I had bendable wires connected to the cartridge head, so I could place them anywhere.
Damn.
And I have a bunch of them all over the record, and they'll kind of do the loop thing, but instead of just doing one loop, they'll play a few different rotations before the wire got so tense, it would skip it back to the start again. So it wasn't as obvious as loops, and then I'd have a glove with styluses on the end of my fingers and play the records with those, and that way I could kind of shimmy the vinyl, the needle in the vinyl backwards and forwards, so you get this warbled scratching effect rather than normal backwards and forwards scratching and things like that. And I wasn't really immersed in the local Sydney scene as much at the time. I always had an interest in experimental music and stuff, and found myself with a show. But then I was doing this show, and Oren Mbachi and Robbie Avername, who run the What Is Music Festival, heard my radio show and contacted the station and found me and said, "We want you to play at our festival." And I said, "Yeah, that'll be great." And then that's when I kind of started gigging, I suppose.
Okay. And when you had the show, you were DJ Smallcock?
Yeah.
Okay. And so what, you make the transition to A Combi?
Well, I should give you the Smallcock story. you have an announcer's mic on the radio, and you turn it on and the speakers turn off, and so it doesn't feed back.
Right, mute.
I brought a radio, a little boombox into the radio station, put the announcer's mics on the speakers, tuned into the station, and then I started feeding the radio back to the station on itself while playing the Village People and turning the radio mics on and off in rhythm to get these kind of feedback rhythms to You Can't Stop the Music. And then someone called up the station and said, "Get off the air, Smallcock," and then hanged up on me. That's how I became TJ Smallcock.
So we gotta give that unknown person.
Yeah.
Contributor. Look, I want to play, because we'll get into a copy, Plight of the Bumblebee.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Taylor. whistle's up now. You can take in a band. And with your crowd, there's a place I know for a good time at. The music's as bright as the toilet smell bad. Thank you. Jump down,
Watch for Pedro Show. That was A. Comey with Plight of the Bumblebee. And after that, Dustin Wong, brand new. Dustin's got a new record out. And this is Steaming Body Heads Home. It's called Eternal Body Hot Spring. That's what it is. Onsen inside his body. This beautiful record Dustin just did. Comes out next week. Guy Boy Voice is brand new. Bob, you know, he's got to put out at least 5 albums in the next 6 months, right? And Free Agents, beautiful. Obama's Prendon, The Magic Were Marbles. This is a brand new from their archive. They got some cat from Immer helping them with excavating, like, I don't know, thousands of songs they made in 40 years, maybe 5 gigs. Huh? Hands Rotten after that with Wild Wild Dry out of Switzerland. Peeled Hearts Pace. This is another one of your projects here, Lucas. Hearts of the Desert from Leavel. Some club was closing, so they needed benefit to stay open, and they asked me to put some bass, and the club's still open. Hell Beans after that, also South London. Spikes. And then finally, Justice Yeldon. 020605. So it might be June 4th, 2002 in Beirut, Justice Yeldon. So tell me about A. Comey.
Well, A. Comey was my Comey van.
Volkswagen. Yeah,
it's Volkswagen, yeah. So I had this Volkswagen, and I rolled it coming down Mount Tamarine one day.
Oh, shit!
Funny story. I did a complete roll, landed on my wheels, and kept driving.
What?
I was running late. Anyway, the windscreen was smashed in, the roof was caved in a bit, and so the body was a write-off, but the engine was still good.
Yeah.
So instead of getting rid of the car, I switched it out with a different body. I found a rack and put the motor in a new body. But when I switched the radio out, I still don't know why, but it kind of like amplified the entire van. Like it turned the van into a contact microphone. I think it was badly grounded or something. So the entire van became amplified through the car stereo. So I think in some of the recordings, you can hear the windscreen wipers running on the windscreen. And basically it's just, yeah, that static, like clicking sound at the start of the track. Sure. That's when you sit motionless in the car. And the more you move in the car and stuff, the more the radio, you know, the basic static sounds kind of come alive. So that was like the first record I did recorded in 94. The car died not long after that, but I love that van. It's more a document of the crazy sounds my van used to make than anything of my own music. That kind of like didn't happen until Peeled Hearts Pace, which you also, I think you just played.
Yeah, I did.
Which was how the turntablism, I guess, of my radio show evolved. I started, instead of using decks, I started using industrial motors with grinding stones and circular saw blades and drum cymbals and all sorts of spinning discs. And instead of tone arms, I'd have knives and skewers and swords and springs amplified with turntable cartridges. So it's kind of hyper-turntablism, textural percussion, but instead of the miking the percussive parts, I would be miking the sticks. So whenever the sticks touch something, you'd get big bursts of sound, and so on and so forth. So there was the whole evolution of my music practice comes from doing the record player stuff, and up into the glass, which I, you know, called the Justice Yeldon period, I guess. And I kind of see me playing the glass as playing a giant diamond tip stylus with my mouth rather than with the groove. So I vibrate the stylus with my mouth, and that's how I get all the notes when I play the glass. So it's just a long trajectory of trying to approach the turntable in different ways, where I've stripped the turntable down to its basic fundamental, and that's the stylus.
Yeah, and you know, so many DJs, they just use it like toilet paper, you know, for after a meal. You got into it being a performing instrument. But let's talk about that performance. At first, you're just making recordings, right? But you start doing this in front of people.
There's never so much into recordings. Like, I always love doing, like, I did the radio show at first, and then I started performing a bit. But the glass has been mainly a performance-orientated thing. Like there's, you know, there's recordings. There's, I think the one you played was in Beirut, so that was live, and most of the recordings are live recordings. There's some studio stuff. I think I gave you some of the first studio stuff you're probably playing soon. But most of it's just been recordings up until the recent pandemic, I guess. Like, I got stuck at home. My tour of Taiwan was cancelled. People started asking me to do streams. I've never really done streams before. Like, I'm a kind of like, you need to be in the room with me kind of performer. It really doesn't translate that well. And so, to someone who never rehearses, I also have no really idea what I'm doing. I just make it up as I go along on stage, and my whole, every technique, every idea I've ever come up with the glass has always evolved in front of people. Like that tense anxiety feedback an audience gives you, it takes you a different place mentally where you can do things that you wouldn't normally do. I guess that's kind of like how I came impervious to the glass. Like other early performances were quite, I don't know how to put it.
Well, when you're doing performance, you're in the moment.
Mm.
Yeah, and I think there's something that can never be captured in a studio thing. We're at the end of the first hour, March 25, 2021, edition Watt Pedro Show. Special guest, Lucas Sabella. Hold tight for hour two. March 25, 2021, second hour of the Watt for Pedro Show. Thank you.
and my dedication is not up to scratch. They're just not into it. Glass jaw, red rose.
Thank you.
Swap for Pedro Show, second hour. Start off with Justice Yeldon, Color Me Your Color. Ben Salter after that. He's the cat who lives in Tasmania. And actually, I think he was Gold Coast when he was a boy, too. Burn Flags. And then finally, I think this is a project you did in China, Rice Corp, with or Corpse. Sorry. There's E there. Rice Corpse with Stamp on My Balls. So I got to play China 2017, maybe it's 4 years now. And how was your experience?
That was my second time in China. I did a residency there with them. They have a thing called AsiaLink in Australia where they pay artists to do residencies in different countries. So I spent like 6 months there forming that band. We did a 10-city tour around the country. It was absolutely amazing. The best musical gelling group I've been in. I've been in a couple of other bands, but I've been mostly a solo artist. But this is, I really enjoy just playing with Yang and Yang, with the pianist and the drummer. And they were just incredible people and incredible musicians and an incredible time. I love China. It's a problematic country, but the people there are great, and the underground is amazing. And the name Rice Corpse is the literal English translation for the Chinese character for shit. So they call their shit the corpse rice. Which I think is lovely.
Yeah. Well, you know, it paints a picture, right? Like their characters are little pictures. You know, it's very artistic. Are you still in contact with those cats?
Oh yeah, we did a live stream together last year, actually, for a Melbourne Make Me Up Club, Make It Up Club organised it, and so we all three of us played in different places during the lockdown, and kind of all the vision is overlaid on top of each other, like, you know, a kind of a transparency. So we're playing in the one frame, but on top of each other. It's quite good, actually. Like, I find it really hard to collaborate long distance, but I thought it worked.
Yeah, we got like a saying here: when it rains lemons, make lemonade.
Yeah.
Fuck it.
Yeah.
What else? Just sit on your hands and feel sorry for yourself and bellyache? I'm tired of that shit. Anyway, you know, we had to end last hour. And I didn't get to ask you, what was your first live performance?
The first live performance was, it's actually a thing called Noise Fest. I played the combi band and I played that turntable contraction I told you about.
Right.
I was given a 45-minute set. I never played live before. I broke everything in the first 45 seconds. Didn't know what I was doing. Spent the rest of the time just trying to put things back together and making little tiny sounds. And I was crying. I didn't know what to do. It was so awful.
God, sounds like a pan shitter.
People loved it. They liked the minimalism of it, even though I'm mostly a maximalist, but anyway, after that, I always said that I would only play as long as I felt like playing, and my sets of, you know, back then were really short, and these days, about 15 minutes typically these days, but I'm starting to do longer sets. I'm trying to get more, I don't know, just trying to get out of my head, and I find if I 15 minutes, I warm up. I find in the rare times that I haven't broken the glass and I've done an encore, I can go into a even higher state. Like, because I'm still nervous. So if I get past the first 15 minutes and manage to play on into a longer set, the rarer times I've done longer sets, I find I get into a different territory and make more interesting music. So I'm trying to break the habit of just finishing and going quickly,
right. Yeah, well, you're kind of bulking up, huh? So let's play bulking.
Okay.
Oh, Thank you.
We're catching up on some Australian news here, people. That chunk of music, Lucas Abella with Bulking, as in bulking up, right? He's not going to be afraid of the 20-minute set. He's going to go all the way. Baby Island after that with Table. And then Lucas Abella with AGC. This acronym?
No, I just asked my 4-year-old son for names for the tracks, and he just said AGC.
Okay.
Same with Balkan was one of my favorite. It was Folding Gold, but that was too long to put on the album.
Yeah. Well, I would have played it. I would just probably split it into parts. So, you were talking about Boyd Rice.
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever get to see him play?
No, I never got to see Boyd Rex
now,
play.
I saw some non-gigs. He had an amplifier and a little box with two buttons. So there was actually three sounds, because there's one button, the other button, or both buttons. And he'd be looking at me. I saw him one time at like a tiki bar, you know. And he's like looking at people as he's doing this shit laughing. Yeah.
I can imagine. I'm not totally sure, but I think his politics got a bit weird, and I got a bit disinterested in the man.
Oh, yeah, that happens, huh? with Orson Welles, I think, called that an inconvenient truth or something. Human beings, they're all...
I was impressed as a teenager, but I guess Pioneer and all that kind of shit, I don't know. But he's not one of my favorites.
Well, what about some other influence?
Japanese stuff, like The Ruins and Boredoms were really big, important things to me, as well as the No Wave scene, Birthday Party, she said, Einzen and Neubarton. They were all early pivotal moments for me and stuff I still love today.
But it's important to have your own voice, right? It's not about rubber stamp and Xerox machines, right?
Yeah. Otherwise, it would be cover bands. You need to take...
In your opinion, do you think there are some noise cover bands?
Oh, there's lots. There's cover bands in every genre. Like people... there might be original music, but they're a cover band because they're just doing somebody else's style. Like, it's like, the Wolfmother's a bad example, but not really a noise cover band. But, people just taking something from the past and then reinventing it as themselves. I like to think I brought something new to the noise genre, and I don't think it's probably worth leaving your bedroom if you're not going to bring something new.
Especially for listeners, maybe. Lucas, tell me some of your ideas about genre. Is it music music?
Yeah, of course. Genre is a sloppy word. Music is music. My definition of music's always been any sound that once it makes your body want to move. And I feel that noise can definitely do that. Like you go to a noise gig, you feel the vibrations, you want to get up, you want to move to that noise. So if it inspires you to dance, it's music. You know, if it doesn't inspire you to dance, it's something else. But what inspires people to dance is different to different people. My noise is, it's kind of rhythmic. It moves all over the place.
It's very rhythmic, if you ask me.
Yeah.
It's not so cliche. I mean, it's fine in its own ways. And plus, you got collisions. You got situations going on that the rhythms are coming from them colliding, so it's not so manageable.
Yeah. I don't like a static wall of noise approach. I've never... subscribe to the I hate people nihilism of some of the noise scene, where they just Like, oh, I want to scare everyone. I want everyone to leave the room. I'm so hardcore. that shit's boring to me. Like, there's no point in, you know, you don't want anyone to leave the room. Why did you ask them there in the first place? I want to entice people. I want to mystify. Mesmerize people with my noise. I want them to focus on my sound and go on a journey with
right,
me.
Right, and that's what I was going to say. Take them on a journey. Take them on a journey. And that's what I hear when I'm listening to your stuff. I love it. We're at the end of the second hour, March 25, 2021. Dishwap Pedro Show special guest, Lucas Sabella. Hold tight for hour three. March 25, 2021. It's the third hour of the Wap for Pedro Show.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Pedro Show. Start off the third hour with another silly day for all you serious people. Lucas and Bella, inspired by the child inside of us all. Tragic comedy off that part one of After Hours Jam. Been waiting for that one, right? Network Glass. This cat, Dor in Baltimore, he blows my mind with his... I think a lot of his stuff is done with editing, though, after he gets the sounds down. Because the stops he makes actually makes the rhythms. And this is one from a record he did called S/T. And then finally, Lucas Abella with Best Family. Best Family?
Yeah, Best Family.
Vis-a-vis Worst Family. No family. How important are titles, Lucas?
Not too important. I just pulled them out of my ass, really.
They didn't die there?
Sometimes they died. Sometimes they should have died there. I kind of lock into them as soon as they've done them, so I never want to bother revisiting it. I could call them Improvisation 1 or Improvisation 2 or Untitled, but and just the first thing that pops into my mind, and now I've gotten into the habit of just asking my son, what's this track called? And it just makes it easy because it takes the decision-making process out of my mind.
Right.
And I like it that way.
Right, you're spreading some democracy.
Yeah.
Do they come first or last?
Last, yeah. I don't come up with a track title and then improvise to that idea, no.
No, yeah, but I ask that because Watt has to have a title or I can't write a song. And nobody I asked that in all these years has agreed with me. Not agreed, taking a similar approach. So
yeah, well, I guess writing a song would probably make more sense because you'd probably come up with a chorus or even just an idea or a word springboard from, and you can come up with a title. You know, that's a good song name and or theme or whatever, and then write around that. But
the way I do it. It makes me hold the focus, especially because I'm writing them on the bass, which is kind of strange when you give it to the other cats. They say, "Fuck, why didn't you write on the cymbals?" The kick drum or some shit like that. Right. Okay, I don't know how to pronounce this. Did your son name this one Booyar?
He spelled that out to me. It's Booring, I think.
Thank you.
Last music for this edition, Booyah from Lucas Bell, Don the Tiger, Joyous Tien, and then finally, Ninny, Lucas Bell, Ninny. Over here, that means kind of idiot. Same thing over there?
Yeah, something like that. Again, Ernie's title. I don't know what he was thinking, but it is, yeah, it's a Ninny, I guess, yeah, it's same kind of connotations if you called someone a Ninny, I suppose.
Okay. And is he
mean slight?
Is he showing musical tendencies?
Oh yeah. I've got we're doing a gig in Copenhagen one night when he was about 6 months old. Popped him up on the drum kit and he just started improvising better than Chris Cassano. So
Chris Cassano, he's quite a stick man. Wow, yeah. At 6 months.
He was 6 months old. I got footage of it. And then he ended up doing a set with a saxophonist that night. It was really good.
Wow. Because, you know, I got other friends that are music, and, like, their kids want to go 100 or 180 degrees away from that direction.
Yeah. He'll probably get to that. But I recently gave up using pedals and got into modular synthesis during the pandemic, kind of changing my setup. And he'll get up and with my patching gear and just sit there for hours just repatching it all. But, you know, not with the music. And sometimes he gets up there when I'm playing, but obviously he just unpatches things. He doesn't really know what he's doing. It's a bit annoying sometimes. But he loves patching that gear, but he also loves playing his slide whistle. He loves... He's always on to play. He's really good on harmonica as well. Just in general, I think he shows some promise. He's only four. I don't really push it on him.
Yeah, I was going to ask. Are you like here's a trombone, you know, here's a bass guitar.
I tend to find all his toys on the street. So like I found him a ukulele once and Some of them in op shops, but you know I didn't buy him a brand new Muppets drum kit or anything like that. So if I luckily find musical toys at the op shop or thrift store, as you call it, or on the street, I take him home and he plays with those. So I'm not forcing musical toys on him, but he's got a decent collection and he likes them. But you know, he'll just as easily play with his Lego.
Yeah, okay, that's the beautiful stage of life. Now, you said you were getting into synthesizer.
Yeah.
Now, well, are these synthesizers with keyboards, or are they just sound-making synthesizers?
It's just a really expensive pedal board, to be honest. But the beauty of modular synthesis is I can take the envelope of my signal and have it manipulate the parameters of other stages of my effects processing. So my sound is processing my sound as it goes. So it just makes the effect processing more, I don't know, fluid, but it also stays organic because I'm not touching the knobs anymore. I don't have to change knobs. Just my signal flow changes the knobs for me. And it also splits my signal into multitudes of parallel chains. So I've got they kind of play along with me in a ghostly accompaniment, I guess. So my original signal in some of those recordings has turned into, you know, up to six different signal flows going through the modular gear and then getting mixed down into the stereo mix. So modular synthesis has turned what has been a mono instrument for the last 17 years of playing the glass. Now it's a stereo instrument and actually a quadraphonic instrument. So the last two gigs I did, I asked for a quadraphonic setup and I've been playing in through four different speakers. And so, yeah, it's really changed up what I what I do. Like, it's the same but different. Like, I think it's just given it more complexity. And I guess what the pandemic did give me was the chance, as I said, I started streaming gigs, and so that made me focus on how I was making music and the final sound much more than when I was just performing, when I was kind of lost in the performance headspace. I never really had time to sit and hone in on my gear and really crystallize my sound. But being at home and doing these streams, I got more time to focus and change what I'm doing. Until I think I'm getting the best results of my life, because I think I'm, for the first time in 70 years of playing glass, I'm trying to make something that's worth listening to at home rather than just something that it's only can really truly be appreciated in the live setting.
So you're thinking more about recording.
Exactly. That's what the last few tracks, they're from the forthcoming LP, I guess, on Photostatic Records or something in Brisbane. They're all recorded at home through this modular gear, and I'm much more focused on recording than I ever have been in my entire career. I guess when you're forced not to gig, for someone that loves gigging and does tours every year, plays as much as you can, put into that situation made you have to rethink, because I didn't want to stop making music, so I started focusing on recording more than ever have before, and because of that, wanted to make something that you could listen to it at a lower volume, as opposed to like early glass recordings where it's a live recording and it's more an artifact of something that happened than something, I don't know, like they're good, but they're not, you know, I wouldn't sit down and listen to them. But while some of these new records, I think you can sit down and listen to it and enjoy it on a, without really having to know what it is. I think, you know, like music should stand alone as a recording, aside from the performance. Even though the performance is important, like there's still improvisations, there's still one take, no overdubs, no post effects. Like they're all, it's just all me. It's a live recording, but it's I've just taken more focusing on what on the final result is, I suppose. I guess more than I have in the past, I guess.
Yeah. That's interesting evolution though, because you learn that by living the life. It wasn't theoretical.
Sorry?
You learn this by real life. It wasn't theoretical. You know, it's this development that you've come to in your music. Look, we used to think records were only flyers to get people to gigs.
Yeah. I've been thinking the same. Like, I honestly think it's been the opposite. I know maybe it's a more Australian experience. I don't know that the records become more important than the live gigs. Like, I've always, you know, when you discover a new local band and you go to all their gigs and stuff and you love them and they're live and you know their songs off by half of that, every time they play it, it's different and strange. But then they go to the studio and they record that music and then you get that album. And then that album slowly fades away the memories of the gigs where that version of the song becomes the quintessential song, the version that most people know. And the looseness of the live show, the evolution of that song through early gigging and as this song gets better and better, like you can only have these experiences with your local scene. But when you live in Australia and most of the music from overseas comes as the album only, like you find the music scene to be album centric in my opinion. Like people probably, if you can put out a good album, you probably have a better career trajectory, I suppose, than if you do a really good live show, but it doesn't translate to record.
Yeah.
Recording centric industry in that respect, when it I always thought it should be performance-centric. Like, I think the performance should come first and the recording second. But that's a, you know, philosophical part, you know, like, that's why I don't want to, you know, I'm a performer first and foremost, so I don't want to do records where I overdub or post-effect. I just, you know, it needs to come from me in a moment, at that moment. And I don't want to fuck with it afterward. I don't even edit mistakes out. If there's a little part in an improvisation that doesn't really work, I won't just cut that out and bend the other two together. I just leave that mistake in there and just, you know, so be it.
Yeah, well, I think that's totally valid. And it's been a great honor to have you on the show, Lucas, truly.
A pleasure. Good to talk to you.
Absolutely, man. And when you get this new quadraphonic album coming up, please come back on the show and let's talk about it, man.
Yeah, if you like.
I totally do. Totally. Yeah. Okay.
That's going to take this shit on the road again, you know?
I want to see it live also. So you come to SoCal here and do some gigs.
Will do.
Okay, brother. People, it's been March 25, 2021, this Wap Peter show. Keep your powder dry.